Welcome to The Watchman, your weekly one-hour expose on Bible prophecy and everything you need to know about the times in which we live, because the coming of the Lord is sooner than you think.
Good evening. Welcome to The Watchman. For today, as we continue our subject on the Antichrist and what the Bible says about him, who, where we expect him to come from, as well as things like that. But before I get into that, I just want to say a number of things. Number one, we've been having people who are asking for recordings by sending, who have been sending messages on the Facebook page asking for recordings. Now, the thing is, if you want recordings, send an email. No, do not post your desire for recordings on Facebook, because I do not send those recordings out. There's a partner who does it, and he does it by opening our mail, our ministry mail, and seeing those who are requesting and sending the messages out to them. Now, if you put on Facebook, he does not have access to the Watchman Facebook account, so he will not send it. I don't send any of those messages. I don't even know how to compress them. I don't know how to send them out. So the point is, please listen to instructions. If you want a recording, they are free, absolutely free. You don't have to do anything. You only have to ask. The reason some people ask and don't receive immediately is because they ask in between sendings. I mean, time when the man is sending recordings. But as long as you ask, eventually they are sent. And when they are sent, eventually it's the same link. You can get the previous ones. Now, there was a mistake. Those for October were marked as November. That was a mistake. And then, of course, if you want to become a partner, don't use Facebook as well. Facebook is just for interaction. If you want to become a partner, use the email address, which is ugandanwatchman@gmail.com. Use that one to get recordings. Use that one to become a partner. And if you're sending, inquiring how you can become a partner, don't inquire as along with other things. Don't send and say, interpret for me this dream. Then at the bottom say, and another thing, how can I become a partner? Let it be a separate email. That's when I will know. Because, you know, sometimes, you know, people are sharp. The recordings are free of charge, but some people think they have to add an extra something. Even the other things, even those who have sent me dreams wanting me to record, I mean, to help them interpret their dreams, when I've been able, I've done it free. I mean, it's open. As long as I have time, I open the email and I answer them. You don't have to put a sweetener saying that, then how do I become a partner? Because then it does, I mean, it's not genuine. Eh? And because I'm a perceptive guy, I walk in the spirit. So I'll tell that you're trying to be sharp. Eh? So if you want to become a partner, send a request to find out how to become a partner. Independent, let it be alone. Now, if you want other things, send them alone, because they will still be attended to with the same interest as the others. You understand? This whole thing is done. Then you don't have to say, I want recordings. Now, something else, I want to become a partner. No, just say, I want recordings. Then another day, send the email, say, I want to become partners. So that then we know that it's just, because the recordings, actually, it is in my interest to send them out. And I want you to send them out to as many people, because I want the message to go as far as possible. That is in my interest. So if you ask for recordings, I'm actually not doing you a favor by sending them to you. That's what I want. That's what I'm here for. I want to make sure that they go as far as possible. So, and if you want to become a partner, you can send and ask how to become a partner, and we shall give you directions on how to do that. But make sure that is sent as an independent request. Now, let's go into the subject for today. I just want to talk a bit about some of the things that are happening in the world in which we are living right now, and which are kind of undercurrents for the coming of the Antichrist, things which you should be in position to know. Maybe you haven't noticed, but you know. Now, there are three possible from Scripture. Again, depending on how you interpret each scripture, of course, there's going to be one that will be the right one, but there are three possible origins of the Antichrist from different scriptures. Now, the reason I say three, because there are different prophecy teachers who seem to be convinced about each one of these three, and they kind of stick to it and say, this is the one, and in almost all cases, they have their reasons. They actually have their, you know, scriptures which appear to back them and so on. So now you can't be sure which one is. I mean, I have, of course, what I believe, but then I'll give you all the rest just so that you can compare. And now if you notice, there are three different almost groupings that are forming in the world currently, and from which one of those three will produce an Antichrist, the Antichrist. Okay, now I spoke the other time briefly about it. It was just basically going over it, but there is the West. These are the three different groupings, one of which is going to produce the Antichrist. There is the West, which we all know about, mostly America and Western Europe, and countries which basically think alike, but it's mostly controlled by America and Western Europe. Then there is the Russia bloc, which now includes China, and includes other countries. You've heard of the BRICS, Brazil, India, South Africa, China, and that grouping of people. Then the third one is the Muslim world, which is quickly and almost very fast becoming an empire, which is being ruled, which is almost acknowledges Turkey as their leader. Now, there's a way the Muslims, because Turkey is a country that is 99% Islamic, and yet is prosperous and has a kind of Islam that has not really affected their politics. So they basically live in peace and are members of NATO, the North Atlantic Trade Organization, and yet actually are Islamic, and basically they are the model for most Islamic countries, and Turkey is acknowledged as what would be a leader of the Islamic Republic, if there is any such thing. And because it has actually happened before, the Ottoman Empire, which was an empire that ruled that ruled the Middle East and was a very rich, extremely rich and powerful empire up until 1917, when they ruled in the Middle East and all, the Ottoman Empire did actually have its capital in Turkey, and it was an empire that kind of united all Muslims under its umbrella at that time. So Turkey is in, and now those are three different groupings. There is the Islamic world, which is an empire in its own right. There is now Russia, which is rising up and seriously stating its claim as of now to be an empire in its own right. And then there is the West, which has been dominant for the last 25 years since the fall of communism, which was headlined by the fall of the Berlin Wall, which has, people have been celebrating 25 years of the fall of the Berlin Wall, which happened on 9th of November 1989. So the West has been in complete domination of most things and actually had a monopoly of power over everything. And not just, and of course their power was sent out in so many different subtle ways that actually just are just as empowering as the actual force that an empire would have. And there have been, but it has come under threat, but it has ruled, the West has ruled for all these 25 years since the fall of communism for a number of reasons. Number one, they have ruled through their colonial linkages with most of the other parts of the world. Okay, the Portuguese, all the South Americans, Portuguese and Spain have all these connections in South America. Of course, Britain has all these connections in, you know, in the Caribbean, in Africa, and in, you know, and in the out east, India, and countries like that. And so also they kind of planted a bit of themselves in countries like ours. So in a way that they remain a bit attractive to us at a very ideological level. So when you become attracted or attached in a way to Britain because you speak their language, because you were taught speaking, being told how John Speke discovered the Lake Victoria, and which is named after the Queen of England, and the Victoria Falls, and what, and basically everything in Africa is named after some king or queen. I don't know why post-independence African presidents didn't change those names, but they should have started there. Actually, the man they called the buffoon, Amin, is the one who had the sense to change the names from, who is Victoria to Africa? Quite frankly, Amin changed Makishon Falls to Kabalega Falls. Now, Kabalega is somebody who is of importance to Africa. But anyway, people who are supposedly more educated than him, because of course they were educated in the West, English education, come and change the names back to what they used to be. But the point is, those people have continued their domination because of colonial linkages, which almost give them almost a birthright to exploit the resources of this country through language and culture. Of course, they spread their culture in so many ways, and it's almost inbuilt in us because of the colonial linkages. They have continued to dominate parts or almost all the world through education and elitism. Now, if you see most of our elites, they just repeat. And it's the problem I have with them. All these people who, I mean, elites who are writing in newspapers and apparently they just mimic what the right, I mean, what other countries, I mean, what the West says is what they believe. They don't have a mind of their own. So when the West says that Mugabe is bad, every writer here says Mugabe is bad. When the West says that so-and-so is good, Mandela is good, for instance, the West, everybody here says Mandela is good. I'm not saying one, they are either good or bad. The point is that those, if you believe they are good or bad, it's not largely because of your own independent opinion. It's because of what has been passed down to you by other people. And it's passed down at a level where you don't even understand it, that it's passed down, but it is actually passed down. And you receive it, and you imbibe it, and you consume it, and it affects your reasoning without you ever knowing where it came from. But that's because of all the cultural and social linkages that we have with those, I mean, with those people through colonialism, speaking their language, watching their movies, you know, and all those other things, social feel-good factor. So there's something that the West inculcated in almost all the world that has all a certain feel-good factor. Now, I saw the Chinese trying to do it before the Olympics. They took some people, some journalists, and actually there was one of them, to China, just to show off how far they've gone and what and all these things. They're basically trying to do what the Americans have done. But the Americans, they don't have to take you to America for people to feel good about America. There's a certain whole thing about, you know, going to those countries now, or even to the UK. What really is in the UK? But because of the colonial linkages and all these social ties that we have with them, somehow they have that, there's the allure of the West that other countries don't have. I mean, how many people are going to really stand there and think about, wow, I wish I would go to Russia? It's hardly in people's minds, because there's no similar good feel good factor. Whereas, I mean, you go to West African countries and they are, I mean, French-speaking countries, and the way they speak about Paris and, you know, all these things, it's all that colonial thing which is still in their minds and everything. So they have ruled, actually, the world and capitalism and through a number of things, through the economic, the so-called Bretton Woods institutions, which are the IMF and the World Bank. Before every country has to bow down somehow before you're accepted into the so-called international community. You have to bow down to the IMF and the World Bank. Countries that have tried not to do it have been ostracized. So they have kind of dominated the world and created this Western empire through all these means, social, economic, cultural, and so on, passing down their cultures to us one way or the other, and we consume them. But now they actually are coming under a great deal of threat from two separate empires. I'm trying to tell you that all these three, there's a reason I'm telling you all these three, any one of them can produce the Antichrist. Now, there's a serious threat to them, and one is from Russia. Now, after the Cold War, Russia was thought to have been dead and buried. And generally, the West felt that, I mean, that's not something not to worry about. But then there are some prophecy teachers who say that, who are of the opinion that actually Russia is not as dead as people think it is. And those prophecy teachers were basing it on what the Bible says, that Russia is not exactly dead. There might still be alive. They might be alive and they might be coming back at some stage. Now, of recent, we've seen a scenario in which Russia seems to be bouncing back, and the West, with all its power, has no answer. Has no answer for them. It started, of course, recently when Ukraine, which has been Russia's ally, tried to move to NATO and to the West generally. And through a people's move, the president, of course, the elected president, preferred to deal with Russia, but the people overthrew him through popular uprising, and they threw him out and everything. And now, of course, that was supposed to be a triumph for the West. Now we are cutting down on Russia's reach, because even their next door neighbors, Ukraine, are now being pulled closer towards the European Union. But well, it wasn't as easy as the Obamas and all the Europeans thought it was going to be, because Russia, with Vladimir Putin, bounced back very seriously. I mean, went and annexed Crimea against all the protestations and all the noise of the West. Putin, with almost absolute contempt, went and did what he wanted in Crimea, and has continued to destabilize the eastern part of Ukraine, where people actually are of Russian descent, and really, very many of them would rather be part of Russia than they would be of NATO and the European Union. And recently, when there was an election in that eastern part of Ukraine, and somebody who is a clear pro-Russia person won the election, of course, the West jumped up and said they are not going to acknowledge the results. But they have, and Putin stood up and said, you have no power to acknowledge or not the results. There was an independent poll, and nobody asks anybody in Ukraine whether they acknowledge that Obama was elected president of America. So Putin was saying, what gives Obama the authority to acknowledge or not the elections in eastern Ukraine? But now you see that there's a pull, and they tried sanctions, and I've seen so many of the Western media trying to report an economic crisis in Russia, which I don't believe is there. But of course, they want to report that Russia is struggling, to show that nobody can stand up to the West and stand. But the truth is, Putin knows what he's doing. He's a very, very, very calculative man, and he's very sinister, and has understood all these things. He has been part of the KGB and what, and he saw the Soviet Union collapse. He worked under Boris Yeltsin. He worked under Mikhail Gorbachev. So he knows what he's doing, and he doesn't have the platforms that these people have, CNN, BBC, and all that. Of course, he also has his own platform and he's trying to push for it. And now what he's done is, first of all, I was reading that CNN is pulling out of Russia. Why? Because the Russian government has become very kind of hostile towards them because of Western propaganda. Because, the purpose of things like those media channels, and they stick to their agenda. They promote Western domination over the world. Read any newspaper in the West, all of them, every single one of them, that's what they are. But you see, they present a scenario where their line is almost the moral line, and any other line is immoral. And of course, so many people here buy into it because we've grown up listening to CNN, BBC, reading their newspapers and things like that, and basically feeding on everything they give us. So now Russian television, Vladimir Putin, has increased the budget, 450 million, and spread it into RT television, and spread it deep into Europe to try and give people the Russian version of things. It may or may not work, because, of course, it's also very, very subjective in favor of Vladimir Putin. I mean, it's really clear propaganda, as much as CNN is propaganda. Russian television is also total propaganda pro-Putin. So maybe even the CNNs and what disguise it a bit, although only for those people who don't understand media. But Russia RT, the Russian television, for them there is no disguise, it is clearly propaganda. There is no doubt about it. But anyhow, so Putin, Russia is bouncing back through Crimea, as I told you, through Ukraine, through Syria, because the regime in Syria of Bashar Assad was actually going to be overthrown if it wasn't for Russia. But Russia stood for him, and Assad is still in power up to now, purely because of Russia. And of course, there is a reason why they stood with them, because Turkey were trying to stand, and other forces, Turkey and a few of the other Islamists were trying to stand, you know, against the Assad regime. And Putin stood there and basically put his arm between everybody else, including America and the Assad regime. I mean, eventually Assad survived because of him, but you know, he's making strategic alliances with those people. Now, they signed a deal, Russia, recently with China, for exchanging oil pipelines, pipeline and things like that, and constructing, I mean, it's the biggest ever project signed in terms of money, magnitude and everything. No project of a similar kind has been signed before. It's worth it's worth hundreds of billions of dollars, and it was signed recently between Russia and China. And now there was the APEC conference, which I'm sure so many people have been reading now in the media, Atlantic Pacific Eastern Conference, the economic conference, which was taking place recently in China, where Obama was, and apparently the biggest news as far as the West is concerned was the fact that Vladimir Putin put a jacket on the president, or rather on the wife of the president of China, who was feeling cold, and the Chinese didn't take kindly to that. I don't know why. It was just a simple gesture by Vladimir Putin, but they didn't take kindly to it. Actually, all the pictures and all the reporting about how Chinese president Xi Jinping, his wife was feeling cold and Putin put a jacket, have all been censored off Chinese television, as Chinese are good at. But anyhow, the conference was China, Russia, and those countries, you know, Bangladesh and what, you know, all those countries there which have a lot of economic muscle in Asia, Korea and what, meeting together and basically coming up with an economic program for themselves, which is also going to be a rival for the West, and it is going to be a rival for the West. So now that is that's a very important step by Russia, because Russia is taking a leadership role in collecting those countries, the so-called second tier economies outside of the West, the BRICS, they call them the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China and South Africa. Those are very big economies, which if they come together, as they recently did, they actually had a BRICS conference not too long ago. And at the BRICS conference, they said they are going to start their own versions of the IMF and World Bank to lend money to third world countries. Basically, they are trying to take the third world away from the West. And the West has dominated the third world on the basis of total exploitation. Now they're trying to say that the West no longer gives loans for infrastructure development and things like that. Why? Because the West is already, they have now no infrastructure to build. They have already built all the roads and bridges that they're ever going to build. But they don't recognize the fact that countries in Africa need to still build bridges and roads and things like that. So they don't give loans because they don't need loans for that purpose. And they don't recognize that the people they are giving the loans are still developing infrastructure. So what the BRICS conference said, they are going to start their own version of the World Bank and IMF through those five big economies. And they basically lend third world countries. And now that was a big threat to the West. It was a very big threat to the West, to the point that immediately the BRICS conference ended and they came up with that resolution, the next thing that happened is Barack Obama invited all African presidents to the White House and was telling them how America is still their partner, and even forgot all his rubbish about homosexuality and all the people who are totally against homosexuality. Where initially he would not invite people who were anti-homosexuality, but because Russia was now coming up, and the biggest threat, more than even the spread of their perversity and their, you know, upside down social practices, is the economy. Now when they realize that the BRICS want to take Africa away from them, and of course Africa has resources, Africa is advantageous because it has resources and stupid people who are very easy to manipulate over small things and take those resources away. Now when they realized the BRICS conference was trying to take that away, Obama calls African presidents for a photo shoot, stands in the White House, tells them rubbish, and then they go and take photos with him, which they have put on their Facebook pages, and that's it. But it's just carrying on the exploitation. It's a pity, actually, that the African bloke is not going to be there, because we still don't think of ourselves as people who can stand at the same table with these people. Anyhow, so, and what happened after the BRICS conference? Immediately after the BRICS conference, Obama calls the Third World presidents, then a plane is shot down in Ukraine, supposedly by Russia. But I didn't quite believe that. I actually totally did not believe it. But anyhow, that's how the politics of the world is. So, the reason Russia is taking a leadership role in this is because India and China will not. But they are actually bigger economies. Recently, the IMF said that the Chinese economy is the world number one economy and has overtaken America as the biggest economy in the world after 240 years of 142 years of the American economy being the biggest in the world. According to the IMF, Chinese economy had finally overtaken them. That was an interesting story I was reading, because America took over as the world's biggest economy when they, I think in 1872, something like that, when they took over from Britain. Britain was the biggest economy. Now, America, as soon as they were through with their civil war, which I think was in the 1850s, and they settled down, within a few years, they took over from Britain as the world's biggest economy. And they have been that for all those years, until a few weeks ago, when the IMF reported that the Chinese economy is now the biggest. Now, you see, there is a threat already to the West and the economies, because when you look at the fastest growing countries in the world, none of them is from the West. Not a single one of them. All of them are either from Asia, Africa, and South America. Okay? Now, when you look at so many things, and now, so what am I trying to say here? That the Western domination has been checked by Russia. Now, the Antichrist is going to come from one of these three different groupings that are going to be fighting amongst each other and are going to have authority over the world. The West, of course, is going to retain some of its authority, but now that authority is being challenged by Russia and China and India and all those countries within there that apparently even includes Brazil, and what which can no longer align with America, but find that they are more aligned to China and to Russia and what through the BRICS. Then the third one will be the Muslim world, the Islamic states. Not the Islamic State, not ISIS, but the Muslim world combined. Now, the Muslims have stepped up their game. They had initially also been exploited totally by the West, and, you know, by basically taking advantage of their oil setting prices for them through OPEC and things like that, and basically having a lot of control over OPEC, the West. But now their eyes are open. They are more in control of their resources, and they know what they are worth, and they are building infrastructure of their own, a power base of their own, and things like that. Okay, but that's not all. They have gained some credence through good PR, through good public relations in the world, and that's why they have managed to make Israel look bad. Because they have taken over, and now they have infiltrated people's mindsets through selling sympathy, selling dead bodies, pictures of dead bodies and what, and basically getting to people. But that's good PR. That's not any different from what anybody else does. That's why Russia is increasing their budget for the Russian television, because they also want to sell propaganda. CNN and BBC and all have been selling propaganda for so many years. They had a monopoly, but now they are being challenged. Now, of course, the Muslims also started their Al Jazeera to try and sell their side of the story, but eventually I think it was overthrown because it was largely bought again by Americans, Al Jazeera. So it has their side, of the story, but it's not as strong and it's not as galvanizing as they had hoped it would be. So now they have a lot of independence of resources, of their resources from exploitation. They take now, and then they also have a bit of military might, because somehow Iran has been left to build nuclear weapons. the one thing nobody had. Now, none of those Islamic states had nuclear weapons. Syria used some kind of chemical gas against people, but that's not that wasn't necessarily nuclear. But then it also goes against conventions of war, the use of chemical gas. You remember that thing for which Obama said that they had crossed the red line, then eventually turned around like the coward he is. Now, but Iran have now developed nuclear weapons, and Israel has been warning America that Iran is developing nuclear weapons, but for some reason I think Obama has, of course America is a bit wary of getting back into war with any Islamic country after what happened in Iraq, because the Iraq war was supposed to be get some work done, remove Saddam Hussein and what, and come out triumphant and then set a system there, but it didn't quite work out that way. And America eventually found it very difficult to exit Iraq even when they wanted to. So they are kind of wary of going, but that means that Iran have actually built nuclear weapons. So the Islamic world, if they get that one leader they have been looking for, have enough military might to cause trouble, okay, to have a center of power. And now they seem to have that credible leader in Turkey. Previously, the Islamic world tried to be had leaders who were mavericks: Saddam Hussein, Ahmadinejad, the former president of Iran, Saddam, of course, the former president of Iraq, people who could not be taken seriously. But now in Turkey, there is a man called Recep Erdogan, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who is the president of Russia, of Turkey right now. And he seems to be accepted by the Muslim world as a leader, as their leader. When he was on a visit to Cairo during the time of the Islamic Brotherhood, before they were overthrown by the army, I mean, people stayed up very late in the night just to welcome him and what. And some of the people interviewed said that he's the new leader of the Muslim world. The last time actually the Muslim world had a leader was Gamal Abdel Nasser, the man who led the Confederation of Countries that attacked Israel in 1967 and led to the Six-Day War. Now, that time, Egypt was seen as the leader of the Islamic world, and Abdel Nasser, who was the president of Egypt, was seen as the leader of the whole Islamic world and the man who basically held the Islamic world together. So he's the one who plotted the attack on Israel in 1967, around the beginning of June 1967. He's the one who declared very aggressively that they are going to walk on the streets of Tel Aviv, walking on the blood of the Jews. He said they are going to drive the Jews into the sea, they are going to kill every Jew, they are going to, basically he said everything provocative. He said the time for agreements and resolutions is over. Now it's time for war. And there is no doubt they actually wanted to kill all the Jews if the Jews hadn't stood up and defended themselves. And by the way, the Jews did not just defend themselves, God defended them. Why is that? Because in 1967, and I showed you this from Bible prophecy, in 1967 Jerusalem had to come under the full control of Jews, strictly in 1967. So you see, now the Israel Arabs think that they started the war. The Arabs think that the Israelis, with the help of America, won the war. The truth is, America was not even involved in the war, because when Israel told them that we are going to be attacked by Egypt and its allies, America said by their estimation, that is not true. So Israel stood on its own, but it wasn't on its own, because God was on its side. Because some of the stories that have come out of that, because even the German war newspaper said there is no way this could have been possible. Even the biggest unbeliever has to say that there is no way this was possible without the help of a divine power. That's what a German secular war newspaper said, because the amount of artillery that was Israel was up against, and how they were totally outnumbered in weaponry, in numbers, in strategic locations. When Jordan joined in, and Syria and what, Israel was basically a small piece of land between enemies all round, from Egypt to Syria to Jordan, and all the other countries, of course, in between there, all of them hostile to Israel. So Israel was sandwiched in between enemies. But after just 6 days, Israel had totally humiliated the whole Arab Confederacy, as the Bible says in Psalms 83. If you read, actually, all the countries that were in that confederacy are mentioned in Psalms 83, and all the words that, basically the words that Gamal Abdel Nasser said, of come, let's wipe them off the face of the earth, that they shall cease to be a nation, and we shall undo the mistake that was made in 1947 when the UN voted Israel to be a nation. Those are the words he said, and that's what is in Psalms 83, and that's what happened exactly, because Israel went and took over East Jerusalem, which was the old Jerusalem, which has the holy sites, okay, and took it up, then took up the Golan Heights, then took up the West Bank, all the places that now the Palestinians are claiming that Israel occupied were places that Israel took over when the Arabs came to wipe them off the face of the earth. Now, of course, Israel, after the Holocaust, said, because of the way they were killed by Hitler, they were basically taken like sheep. They were defenseless. I'm sure some of you have watched the movie of the Second World War. They were totally defenseless, taken like sheep. When they saw how they had been exposed, they said never again. They will always go down fighting. And they have fought. And if they didn't fight, the Arabs want them out of the face of the earth. Of course, people are saying Israel should talk peace. But because they don't know, they don't understand, they have never really understood what the Arabs wanted from Israel. What the Arabs want from Israel, especially Hamas, who in their own charter say that they were created to kill all the Jews in the world. But then, of course, you hear even America supporting them. It's funny, I mean, because people argue a lot about the Middle East when they don't have the facts. What they have, a few things which they have picked up from CNN, and other similarly biased channels, and then they go with that, and then they argue emotionally, and what, you know, emotional arguments. I promise to tell you a bit about emotional and intellectual arguments, but I still haven't found the time to do that, but I will find the time. So until Gamal Abdel Nasser died in 1981, I believe, when he was assassinated, until that time, when he died, actually, the Muslims have not had a leader, one single person that unites them together until that time. Actually, I remember one of the quotes of the television channels at the funeral of Nasser was, somebody said that Nasser's greatest achievement was his funeral. And he said that because never again will it be seen where how many million Arabs mourning like orphans, because they saw him as their leader. Now, until then, from then until now, when they have the Turkish president, they have never really had a leader, which is why some people believe that Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the president of Turkey, could be the person that unites the Islamic caliphate and actually turns out as a possible antichrist at the end. Does he have credentials, biblical credentials, that would make him possibly an antichrist? Well, that is to be debated. But then, there are a few things about him which are curious. First of all, the way he's strengthening his power. In Turkey right now, Erdogan, and becoming more or less a dictator. You know, he was quoted as saying, it wasn't something that was supposed to come out, but he was quoted as saying that democracy is like a streetcar. You drive it until such a time when you reach your destination, then you jump out of it. So basically saying you just use democracy to get into power. After that, you become a dictator, which is kind of, okay, authoritarian. He's authoritarian and hardly anybody questions him. And now Turkey seems to have accepted the fact that they are having a president like that. He has only recently completed a palace, a grand palatial home, which has 1,000 rooms, and is built on 200,000 square meters, and costs the the Turkish taxpayer $615 million and is built in accordance to the architecture from the Ottoman Empire. Why? The Ottoman Empire is the last big Islamic empire that ruled over the world. Actually, it ruled over the entire world at the time, because it was so big and so rich, almost the entire world listened to the Ottoman Empire. And his big palace of 1,000 rooms is called the White Palace. Now, might that be similar a bit to the White House, or some kind of, well, rival for the White House? Now, also curiously, the first guest to be hosted at the palatial home of the authoritarian Turkish president will be, guess who? Pope Francis, who is scheduled to visit it at the end of this month. I found that interesting. But there's a reason why this man has built this palace this way. It's not just him showing off money. It's about showing off power. And in his own words, showing off the new Turkey. What is new about it? Strong, powerful Turkey, which unites the Islamic world. Okay? He actually said before that this palace represents the new Turkey. Powerful and diplomatically influential. And these are his words. He said that the palace was essential to present modern Turkey to the world. If you want to go ahead of our rivals, now I'm quoting him, if you want to go ahead of our rivals in the modern world, we need to do something. Everyone judges you according to your appearance. So in his mind, that's why he built this grand, very extravagant, 1,000 rooms kind of White House, which he calls White Palace. Now, on top of that, he went and bought a brand new presidential jet, Airbus 330-200, which was purchased at $185 million, something of his own Air Force One, and decked it, of course, in the red and white colors of the national flag. But, you know, asked why you're spending all that money on the presidential jet, he said, "We need such a plane to show the greatness of Turkey." So you see, he's trying to push a message. And now, initially, actually, this Erdogan, when he was prime minister, had a good relationship with Israel. And he actually visited Tel Aviv in 2005. And then Shimon Peres was the president of Israel, addressed the Turkish parliament, and became the first, and was the first time that a Jewish leader had addressed the legislature of a predominantly Islamic nation. But eventually, of course, when he started galvanizing all the Muslims together, inevitably he used enmity towards Israel, because they fell out in terms of relation in 2010 when there was an attack by Israeli commandos on a flotilla which was coming from Turkey and going into Gaza, which Turkey claimed had humanitarian aid, but Israeli intelligence knew it had weapons which were going to be used by Hamas. So the Israelis, in spite of everything, went in there, the commandos, and picked out and killed some people in there who were carrying the ammunition, and they jumped out. Now Turkey protested and told Israel to apologize. Israel, of course, did not, because they knew that they had prevented an attack against them. So now the question is, and so this man is now issuing statements against America. Erdogan is presenting Turkey as a leader of the Islamic world, which is a different center of power from the West and from Russia. And he actually, it was interesting, because Syria turned out to be a serious battleground for all these three centers of power. Erdogan and Turkey wanted the rivals of Bashar Assad to overthrow. The people were fighting him. America initially tried that, but then they realized they don't trust the people who are trying to take over Assad, because they were, Islamic fundamentalists, and they could easily become terrorists when they get into power. So America didn't want Assad, but it didn't want those who were fighting him. So they eventually just went cold on the whole Syria thing. Russia was very clear on who it wanted. It wanted Assad in power. And Turkey was very clear on who it wanted. It wanted Assad out of power. So you see three centers of power in the world. One of them is going to produce the Antichrist. This is why I'm telling you all this politics. I'm not just dropping these politics for nothing. Now, does this Erdogan guy have any biblical qualities that make him? I told you why people believe that the Antichrist is going to come from the Islamic world. Here are some of the reasons. Number one, John chapter 2 verse 20, 1 John 2:22. So says, whoever denies the Father and the Son is the Antichrist. Who is an Antichrist? He who denies the Father and the Son. Now, of course, Islam is the only religion that denies that Jesus is the Son of God. And John says that he who denies that Jesus is the Son of God is the Antichrist. Okay? So that's why people say, and actually the only time the Antichrist is used in the Bible is there by John. And he's referring to people who don't believe that Jesus is the Son of God, who happen to be Muslims. So that's one reason why people believe that the Antichrist will come from the Islamic world. But the second one is Revelation chapter 2 verse 13. In the letter to the church in Pergamos, Jesus said the church in Pergamos dwells where Satan's throne is. Now Jesus said Pergamos is where Satan's throne is, and the location of Pergamos in the Bible, Pergamum in the Bible, is actually Istanbul, Turkey today, where Erdogan was born, in the city of Istanbul. He was born right there. So now you see, they are saying, if Jesus said in Revelation that Satan's throne is there, and he was talking about a place that the church, because there was a church called in Pergamum, and it was in that city where there was a statue of Zeus, a huge statue of Zeus, which was eventually actually uprooted and taken to Germany. And Turkey tried to get it back from Germany, but Germany refused, and Turkey eventually decided they had no legal grounds to reclaim that statue from Germany. Why? Because at the time there was no such country as Turkey. Turkey hadn't been constituted as a country, so they couldn't claim what was in that land before Turkey existed. So they did a replica of the statue that was taken by the Germans and put in a museum, and they put in their statue of Zeus. Now Jesus says that's where the devil's throne is. So if it's right there, then maybe that's where the Antichrist comes from, because if that's where the devil's throne is, and this man Recep Tayyip Erdogan was born in the city of Istanbul in Pergamos, which Jesus said where Satan's throne is. One of the third reason is the four empires that are mentioned in Daniel chapter 7 and verse 3-7. The lion represents Babylon. In Daniel chapter 7, verse 3-7, lion represents Babylon. The bear represents, of course, Medo-Persia. The leopard represents Greece. And the beast represents the Roman Empire, the fourth Roman Empire that will come. Now, if you look at the areas that were covered by all these, by these empires, if you draw a map of the empire of Babylon, where the empire of Babylon, you know, its jurisdiction, and then you add on Medo-Persia, Greece, and the, eventually the Roman Empire, okay, you find that it covers Turkey, much of Turkey, Israel, Armenia, parts of Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, and four of those countries border Israel. But you see, Turkey is one of them. So if you actually are to believe that the Roman Empire that is going to be revived, which the Bible talks about, is the same as the Roman Empire that was there before in terms of geographical location, then you have to believe that in reality it is Turkey. That the Antichrist is either going to come from Israel, Turkey, Armenia, parts of Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan. So you see, almost all those countries are Islamic countries, okay, apart of course from Israel. Most of them are Islamic countries apart from Israel and Armenia. So that's one of the reasons why people think he is coming from Turkey, because Turkey has already identified itself as a leader of some kind of Islamic empire. Now, the fourth reason is the Bible calls the Antichrist the Assyrian. It actually calls him that in three different passages, the Assyrian. It calls him the Assyrian in Isaiah chapter 10, Isaiah chapter 14, and Micah chapter 5. Now, there was a king of Assyria, a man called Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes, who was an Assyrian king between 175 and 164 BC, who was some kind of precursor for the Antichrist. He did everything the Antichrist is supposed to do, because he was some kind of foreshadow of the Antichrist who is to come, because he went and did the abomination of desolation in 168 BC, 4 years before he was eventually overthrown and killed and overthrown. He went and stood in the temple in Israel and declared himself to be God. Now the Bible says the Antichrist, when he comes, will do that when he causes the abomination of desolation at the end of the first 3.5 years of the final 7 years of human government. Now this man did it, and he was the Assyrian king. And the Bible goes ahead to name the Antichrist, actually call him, he's one of his titles, is the Assyrian king, the Assyrian. Okay, so geographically, the Assyrian Empire was ruled from Turkey geographically. So that's why some people would believe that actually Antichrist comes from Turkey. And if that is so, so many people are looking at Erdogan as one of the possible candidates for that. Of course, when I present other cases, they will look perhaps as comparing or even more comparing than this one. So don't go and say that the Watchman said that the Turkish president is the Antichrist. I'm going to present other candidates after in the consequent programs, and you might find that they actually have bigger credentials than this man. Now, the fifth reason is Ezekiel 38, the Gog and Magog prophecy, the prophecy of the Gog and Magog, the war that is going to see Gog and Magog, and it mentions so many countries, Meshech, Tubal, Togomach, Goma, which are going to attack Israel towards the end, the end times. And the Bible says there's going to be a big slaughter, that the corpses will be buried for 7 months. Now, if you look at that prophecy, all those countries mentioned there are located within the boundaries of Gog and Magog is actually Russia, a bit of Russia and that, but much of the countries there, if you were to look at them geographically, Tubal, Togomach, Goma, are all located within the boundaries of Turkey. So that's why people are believing the Antichrist comes from there. And then that's why Turkey attacks Israel. And if you were to look at the statements being made, inflammatory statements now being made between Israel and Turkey, that does not seem like very far away, or it seems like a possibility and not in a very distant future. Now, number six, as I draw to a close of this, is the Bible says in Daniel chapter 7 and 8 that the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the temple. The people of the prince who is to come will destroy the temple. Now, the temple that was there at the time was destroyed. The temple was destroyed by the Romans in AD 70 under Emperor Titus. So you would say the Romans are the ones who destroyed the temple. And that is true. But also true is the fact that the Roman army, the legion of the Roman army which destroyed the temple, was the 10th legion, which was stationed in the city of Antioch. Okay, you remember Antioch from the Bible, the place where Christians were first called by that name. Now, the 10th legion which destroyed the temple was stationed in Antioch, and it consisted of Arabs and Syrians. Now, the Roman army went and turned people from different places, recruited them into the army, and had the Roman commander over them, if you understand what I'm saying. So the people who actually destroyed the temple were Syrians and Arabs. So that's why people say, now, if you are to go to the specifics of all of that, then actually the people of the prince who is to come are Arabs. So that's why the Antichrist, who is the prince to come, might be an Arab, and okay, might be a Muslim or Muslim origin. Now, the final one, which is the seventh, is the Bible calls the Antichrist the King of the North in Daniel chapter 11. Now, if you look at a map of the Middle East, Turkey is just north above Israel. Actually, if you draw a map all the way up from, if you draw a line all the way up from Jerusalem, almost straight up, you're almost going to land on Istanbul, Turkey, which is Constantinople, which was shared the city of Constantinople, and is now called Istanbul, Turkey, where Recep Tayyip Erdogan was born. So, if you study all those features, then you see that that's what people like, big, powerful, whatever, prophecy teachers. That's why so many of them. There are other reasons why, but some of them are convinced. People like Perry Stone and others are convinced that the Antichrist comes from the Middle East and is going to be of Islamic origin. I'm not exactly convinced yet about that, but there's certainly credentials for that, as I've shown you from my study, and I've been studying a bit of that. But of course, I'll show you all the other people in studies to come, particularly the next one and the one afterwards, and we study all those credentials, and then you can make up for your mind who you think is the Antichrist. In the meantime, if you have anything to ask, you can use the email address at will. It's UgandanWatchman@gmail.com. You can send your emails there for whatever reason. You can also send your testimonies there if you have any. You can go to Facebook. If you want a recording of all these things, use the email. If you want to become a partner, use the email. God bless you.
That was The Watchman, with fascinating insight into the end times. Join us again next week for another update on Bible prophecy.